You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. The licenses for the digital banks is still pending. We're waiting for the Bank Negara to make the announcement. It can come anytime in the fourth quarter or even in the first quarter. But having said that, digital banks or banks doing digital items are rather one and the same. But there are some significant differences in terms of capital management, in terms of capital requirement and such. In fact, some banks like CIMB and Maybank, they are arguing that they've been doing digital through their banking system for the longest of time. However, because of the recent applications, some reports show up to 35, even 40 applications for the digital banking license. There comes a topic when we need to ask whether or not banks are adapting to the requirements of digitization, particularly in a post-pandemic world. Here to unpack all this is Jasbir Singh, the Vice President of Applications at Oracle Malaysia, a good friend of the show. Jasbir, how are you?
Not too bad, Ibrahim Sani. Thank you very much for inviting me again. It's always been an honor and a pleasure to talk to you.
The worst part about all this is, as we put up the show and we try to put the show together, I want you in the studio. But, you know, this is where things are, 18 months down the road, we are still here doing this via virtual. Even though 90% of adults have at least received first vaccination, the cases are still high. We still need to do this. But one thing that is good, quote unquote good, is that the adoption of digitization is not just on the rise. It is really high and it is here to stay. Virtual meetings are now the norm. Folks are now moving forward. When they arrange for a meeting, it's understood to be virtual instead of physical. That's the fun part. But when it comes to banks and banking services, do you feel that the consumers are more than happy to adopt digitalization through their banking services needs? And correspondingly, do you feel that the banks and perhaps the new entrants to the digital banking sphere, are they ready to receive these type of consumer behavior?
I think your question is very much pivoted on whether are the banks ready. I think if you look at what happened, the pandemic, nobody knew what was coming. Nobody was ready for it. But the ability for people to transform, right? The human being to transform, meaning like you go and get a mobile phone, you install MySejahtera. You get people who are losing jobs, transforming, becoming Grab drivers, right? So the human beings will adapt and they will change. And I think banks are also doing that, right? Because the fintechs right now are coming in, right? Now, if you really look at it, we've got Boost, we've got Touch and Go, we've got the Grab and everything. I think it's not the question of whether people will change. And I think the pandemic had a very big impact on this one, on a very big impact on adopting digital capabilities. Overnight, people have to figure out exactly how, because it was a question of, life or, do you get a job, right? Is to put food on the table. And I think the banks also saw that happening, that the digital adoption, just getting a simple mobile phone, putting MySejahtera, installing Grab or installing Touch and Go, is now becoming a norm, right? So the banks know that the millions of transactions that are going through all these e-wallets, right? And that's changed the pattern on how people like you and me, all of us, how right now we're adapting. If you go back pre-pandemic, I used to go to the bank, go and withdraw $1,000 and give it to my wife. Okay, this is for groceries and everything. Nowadays, it doesn't happen anymore right now. You cannot go out, right? So automatically, right, you get a touch and go. And that brings a new paradigm, right? That brings the millions of transactions. That brings a lot of teradata of the data, right, that's coming. And banks need to now figure out what to do and how to change and evolve as soon as possible.
The thing about Malaysian banks is this, and I find it odd defending the banks, but it is what it is, right? The digitization capacity of Malaysian banks is better than in the region. However, there's a lot of rooms for improvement, particularly against non-bank actors like the Touch and Go, like Grab, Food Panda, and all the other payment systems out there, Boost, you mentioned some of them. But having said that, the calls for the bank's chief technology officers or chief digital officers or chief data officers, they tend to fall on deaf ears when it comes to management, when it comes to board. The board or the management tends to prioritize all the other stuff ahead of technology investments when it comes to improving the not just the technology aspect, but the digitization aspect of the consumer, particularly retail banking and business banking. Do you feel that that kind of mood is now changing or has changed because banks really, really need to really get a good grasp of how to do things digital following the pandemic?
Yeah, I see there's a shift, right, in terms of adopting technologies. From Oracle perspective, we do work with most of the large banks in Malaysia. We do see banks starting programs, starting projects around how do you link both the front office and the back office, how you take transactional data, which is within the bank. And now that transactional data actually is coming from outside. A good example is if you got touch and go, you can take money from your bank and keep it there and you'll earn interest, right? Which is partnering with CIMB principal. Now, imagine the banks right now know that they have to deal with millions of transactions that's coming from third party, from internal. And I think that the gap that I see right now is in a bank right now, from what my personal experience in Malaysia is that the buying cycle of the of adoption of technology and being agile is hindered by the process of acquiring technology. The traditional way of, let's start with an RFI, then we go through an RFP, then we go to board tender committee, then we go to this committee, then you go to that committee. Right? By the time you actually acquire that, right? And I think that needs to change because in today's world right now, when Oracle is providing things in more of a consumption base, right? We're giving you software as a service, right? That thought process of now, if you want to just expand and take another service, you need to go through the whole board process and the board steering committee, IT steering committee. Yeah. That will not work. I think that's one of the hindrances to the way I see things moving. And banks need to now figure out way of consuming software and technology in a continuous manner, not in a manner of RFI, RFP, let's go and do a proof of concept, right? That mindset will not, you look at how fintechs operate, right? They do sprints, let's go and try this out, right? Consume it, test it out, works, let's go, right?
Yeah.
And banks need to now start thinking about not being agile just from providing capabilities to their customers, but also internal. How do you bring the back office and front office data together and third-party data? Let AI take those things and give recommendations and then keep on evolving. That's the thing. It should not be hindered by the standard procurement process, right?
Yeah.
That should not be a stopping.
Some banks are trying to manage the level of bureaucracy that they have to go through. This is how banks are born, I suppose. By creating a subunit or a fringe department where it's not sandboxing, but basically creating an arm that can move a little bit faster than the main body. And I can name some brands, but generally speaking, this is their way of circumventing their own levels of bureaucracy. Everything is, of course, done with regulation, with the necessary oversight by Bank Negara and so on. Yeah. But you feel that this is perhaps the next step for banks to go, i.e. create a separate arm, make sure they run as fast as, for instance, fintech companies that you rightly pointed out, without being encumbered by the mammoth or the titanic level of bureaucracy that banks normally have to face.
Yeah. And I think when you mentioned that, if you can create, you know, either a SWAT team or a special division, and you're given a certain budget for them to go, right? That team or that small division can work with all the technology providers and look into, okay, how can I consume certain things, not commit to a five-year, because nobody can predict the future. Right? Being agile means contracting also needs to be agile. How you work with the technology partners like Oracle also needs to be agile, right? So we do, from Oracle, we do understand that, right? That's why the commercial structures and sometimes the licensing or subscription models are designed for customers to have the flexibility to play around before they actually embark on what we call as full-scale production or a full-scale main system, right? Before it goes to the mainstream, you need to have these sprints and everything, and then you go to mainstream, and then you come back again. You do another sprint, and you go to version 2. Everything needs to be thought in terms of 2.0, 3.0, or 4.0, right? So it's continuous improvement. And that's what technology companies are doing. We are providing software as a service, which is also continuously being updated. And that needs to go straight into the DNA of the banks in order to, you know, to give the customers. We live in an experience economy right now. If you are trying to say that my so-and-so application can only work on Android, cannot work on Apple, there you go. You lost 70% or 50% of the population, right? It's the experience, right, of the customer. And that should be the priority. Driving backwards into the agility is required in the bank by taking all the data, right, from third party internal data into a data lake, and then pushing out sprints, right, version 1, version 2, version 3, right, and then, you know, focusing purely on the customer, because our customers are changing. If you look at it right now, honestly, within 1 year, I've moved like 99% of my financial transactions, right, like buying something, all through my mobile phone. And I got no choice. I moved it within a period of like 6 months. Now imagine that 17 million people who we know in My Sejahtera right now, I'm using that as the people of Malaysia who have got a mobile phone. At least 10 million has done something like what I've done. Move my financials and my buying and power, my buying or my sell or selling or whatever. My financials has been moved to my mobile phone. My son wants money. I just go and I just transfer money to him and he buys things. So imagine the whole ecosystem in my family has changed simply because of the pandemic, and banks need to be ready for that.
Yeah. Just be a fantastic conversation. I just need to go for one short break. When we come back, we'll continue on with Oracle Malaysia. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Jasbir Singh, the Vice President of Applications at Oracle Malaysia. We're talking about digitization, we're talking about banks and how adaptive are they, and whether or not the market really needs Malaysian banks to be as adaptive and adoptive as possible when it comes to digitalization. This is more so important, because of the pandemic. And we are trying to unravel not just the world of banks and digitization, but perhaps also look at possible entrants into the market. One such entrant is, of course, Apple Pay. Samsung Pay has been around, but the adoption rate's been quite low. But, you know, there's a lot of other players out there that is ready to take up the mantle of being the number one choice for consumers when it comes to payments and payment gateways. So Jasbir, do you feel that a lot is at stake right now for banks in Malaysia? If they, you know, if they don't pick up the slack, all these other players are going to come in. You know, my Apple Watch, the one I'm wearing now, is Apple Pay capable. It's just not enabled. You know, when I went to Singapore back in 2018, I think, they were busy paying, you know, drinks and coffee and everything just by swiping the Apple Watch, you know. So it's there. It's just, I don't know whether it's protectionist policy or what, but, you know, if the banks slack off, all these people are going to come in.
Yeah, I think whether it's Samsung Pay or Apple Pay, or I've got Fitbit Pay on my
yeah, list, yeah, know, right? Yeah.
I think it's not that it's the payment method, right? But I think what the banks, right, is, okay, going back right now, traditionally bank was very much around giving out loans, right, for somebody to go and buy a house. So you get 10 people, you met your quota, right? You get maybe, let's say, 5 million ringgit of loan has gone out by one sales guy from the bank, right? The mindset was all around big numbers, right? But now we live in a world where the banks need to focus on the fintechs, because right now, most SMEs are going towards getting, the recent study was 27% of the funding for SMEs will go towards digital banks, right, into small banks. You open up one branch in the traditional bank, and then three more new accounts are opened up right now in the digital bank, right? So it's more around the volume right now. It's no more about, I need to go and give out loans to big things, right? The bank need to understand right now that they are connected into this whole ecosystem where millions of transactions are happening, and how are you leveraging those millions of transactions? Simple example, if today you've got your CIMB Click right now, and you can actually go ahead and even buying something for 10 ringgit, you can use your card, you can touch, right? Now imagine, right, more and more people are moving towards buying and spending by just even 5 ringgit or 3 ringgit 20 cents, right? We're talking about volume. Now suddenly overnight, it's no more 5 transactions for the thing, but we're talking about 5 million transactions per day, and the total dollar value is far more than those 5 loans, right? So the shift is right now towards how are you as a bank right now having an integral part in the population's expenditure. You need to put your finger on the pulse right now. You need to know that this Mr. Jasbir Singh, he just did a transit in 7-Eleven. Every day he goes to 7-Eleven to get this thing. Now the bank need to see which are the partner, the ecosystem. Can I get Starbucks to partner with me? I can push that message out to Jasbir. Don't go to 7-Eleven. I can give you a better option. So that's how you hook. The stickiness is there. If not, Jasbir is going to go to Grab to go and get that Starbucks offer or go off to somebody else. So the banks need to know it's no more about 5 customers taking housing loan, but the 5 million customers spending money on their coffee.
Yeah, no, this is exactly what I'm talking about here, because predictive payments, predictive spending also breeds about expected levels of credit, an increasing awareness of by the banks of how the consumer behave or the customer behaves. I'll give you 2 examples. Pantas.com, it's a startup in Malaysia. They are giving free invoicing capabilities and all this to small and medium-sized, mostly smaller and micro companies. You know why? Because they want to track the companies making payments, receiving payments, and also why they can, you know, record this data and share it with the bank of their the partners that they have built right now. And the banks now know the kind of credit worthiness of these SMEs and micro SMEs. That's a brilliant way of doing things. But of course, everything is with consent, lah. Yeah. That goes without saying. For consumers, you know, we have online groceries here, you know, and then if you know, some commodities like milk, eggs, whatever, right? I buy it non-stop, and I have to buy it anyway. You know, cornflakes, for instance, you know. If it's running out in my kitchen, you know, is there a simple one-tap go? You know, it helps everybody, right? It helps the grocer sending the thing to my fridge. And you know, at every single point in time, the banks can benefit from this. I'm just trying to understand what is the holdup, I suppose, when it comes to automated recurring purchases or assessment of credit worthiness through, you know, invoicing and receivables. I'm sure there's a better way of doing things.
Yeah, I think my view is very much around, you know, when you're, I think to your point, right, if you can create in a bank right now, not give a person a title, the chief digital officer, and then hopefully he will do something. But actually to give the guy, okay, I'm going to call you chief innovation officer. I'm going to give you 10 people, right? And I'm going to give you this much of money. Go ahead and start feeding next generation business processes into the bank. I think some banks are doing that, right?
Yeah.
But some of them are saying, oh, I can't do it because if I look back, oh, we're still using a very old core banking. We're using a very old. So some people need to make decisions now, right? Is either you change, if not, you'll be left out. And you will be the back end, the guy who will then, you know, move money and help touch and go, okay, can I put 5,000? So right now, if my banking right now, all I do is I just move money from my current account and put it into my touch and go and I spend it. And touch and go is now increasing to 20,000. They're offering me higher and higher. That's what is attracting me. That's the experience, right? I'm not getting any experience from my current bank. So what I do is, you know, when your salary goes in, you move the money out and you put it over here.
What do you call this? You're describing how I behave at the end of the month. I used to have a check book. You know, I'm sure it's there somewhere lying around the house, but. But, you know, I mean, that's the point, right? There was this once I had to pay somebody with cash. I have no cash at home. I mean,
yes,
That's the strangeness of it. Would you say that decision paralysis is one of the biggest risks that banks are facing right now?
Yes, I think the process, it is their internal process of acquiring or adopting technology starts with, okay, let's go and do a board paper first, get a board approval.
Yeah.
Right, which happens right around this time right now.
Yeah. Right?
Around now, the budgeting time. Okay, what projects will you be doing next year?
Yeah.
So that's the traditional. So if it starts now, it goes for board approval. Can we do this project next year? So somebody has to identify a project which will go live in 12 months from now. And guess what? 12 months from now, you know, everybody will be flying around on the airlines and going for holidays, and then you miss the boat.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The world is changing so fast. We have no idea this year is going to be the same as next, as the following year after that. It's very different, very difficult. Okay. Before we end our conversation, I just want to ask you what your opinion is when it comes to digitization, and not just with banks, but with the entire landscape in Malaysia, all services, you know, payment gateways, hotel bookings, all the kind of landscape that you're going to see. We are very near towards the end of the pandemic. People are expecting things to not be back to normal until 2 to 3 years from now, but surely the road to recovery is near and high. Do you feel that some businesses need to jump on the opportunity of digitization and perhaps make some of the migration that are already made been done on digitization a little bit more permanent, meaning that people don't go back to brick and mortar? Where do you see the opportunities lie?
I see the opportunities lying right now. If you, you know, I tend to, you know, when people say, right, that the bank needs to come together with the likes of Starbucks and Tesco and work with the likes of Touch and Go or Boost, and then try to build this whole ecosystem, right, so that it can be optimized. Basically, you're working with your data, third-party data, putting AI into that, and then trying to, each one of them, right, either the Starbucks people or the Tesco people, or the bank, or the Touch and Go, right? All trying to figure out on data. So because we all know right now, the term data is the oil of next economy. That's common sense. That's given. If somebody does not know that, he's in the wrong place right now, at the right time, right?
Yeah.
Now, the thing is this. Some people have seen this thing. So they come with super apps. Now, if you look at your mobile apps right now, they're becoming super apps. What is the meaning of super app? You are trying to bring a community together, right? So that it becomes much more easier for an end user. Now, I'm in my 50s right now. But if you look at the millennials, they thrive on super apps, right? Where they can buy their stuff, they get points for that, they can use it for flying, they can use it for eating, they can use it for the thing. Now, what's missing is, how does that super app now go upwards? How do you go to, let's say, the Data in Langkawi and pay using your super app? Because that's another different layer, right? How do you go to the boutique hotels, the boutique restaurants, and pay using your super app? That's when you start seeing the bigger, the high spenders, the top spenders moving upwards. And hopefully the millennials in 5 years from now will be there. Yeah. And that's where I think, right, the whole thing will converge. And to a millennial who will be, let's say, 45 to 50 in about 5 to 6 years from now, imagine that will be their DNA. They will not carry cash. They expect their banks to treat them like gold, meaning analyze all my expenditure, all my thousands of transactions, including taking my Fitbit data also to see my health, what is it, and provide me some recommendation.
Yeah, and everything has to be done instantaneously. Everything has to be done, you know, backdoor. I don't have to think about this. Just look at the impact, the decisions that needs to be made, not the sending of the data.
Yeah. The convergence of the physical world with the real world, to your banking world, towards your exercising world, and your, right, all of this, right? So then, if I'm spending a lot of money on health drinks, why wouldn't GNC partner with somebody and come into my super app and promote me? Or, you know, the gyms, right? They can reach out to me.
Yeah.
That's the experience, right? That somebody comes to me and tells me, I've got an idea for you. And it's and I'm giving you 3 months free. Oh, really? I can go and try out a gym for 3 months because they know my pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jasbir, I, you know, unfortunately, we have to draw this conversation to a close, but I really want to bring you back in into the studio when we can. But for now, that was our conversation with Jasbir Singh, the Vice President of Applications at Oracle Malaysia. If you've missed any part of this show, just head on to astroawani.com, look for Oracle, look for Notepad. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.